All right, Tavos, say good morning. Our shir today is sponsored by Said and Sina Hiken on the occasion of the engagement of their daughter Yael to David Issever. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Yerta Hashem, the wedding should be b'sha'at tova u'mitzlachas. You should have incredible nachas from the Kala and from the Chosan. Mazel tov. So today's daf is Chav Chas. We are beginning on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Beis. So it says the Gemara, we're talking about Gilgul Shavua. The Mishnah introduced us to the idea that if you have to take a Shavua, if you have to take an oath, so the halacha is, if you have to take an oath, so that oath could devolve upon another area that normally would not be subject to an oath. So for example, the example given in the Mishnah was, that normally there's no shavua that's generated for issues concerning karka, real property. But if you have to take a shavua regarding talton, movable property, you could then be megalgil the shavua. If there are other contested issues regarding real property, once you're taking the shavua from a talton, you could be megalgil. You could roll the obligation of a shavua ultimately on to real property as well. So the Gemara says, what is the source? The Gemara said yesterday, what is the source for Gilgul Shavua? So the Gemara explained that the source ultimately was Sota. Because what happens by Sota? By Sota, the woman is taking a Shavua for that which she did during Nisuin. And what do we do? We're Megalgil the Shavua. We roll the Shavua onto anything that was potentially done during Erisin. Erisin by itself, meaning potential marital indiscretions during Erisin, cannot normally generate a Sota Shavua situation. But once she's already taken the Shavua for a Sota issue that was generated during Nisuin, we could be Megalgil it onto Erisin as well. So says the Gemara, Ashkechan Sota di Isura. So I know that now that there's a concept of Gilgul Shavua by Sota, which is a matter of Isser, a matter of prohibition. How do I know that the concept of Gilgul Shavua applies to Mammon, applies to monetary matters as well? Tana de be Rabbi Shmuel Kavachomer. So we'll say this year, Rabbi Shmuel says, Kavachomer, Mas Sota, Tap of Chavchas, when it comes to Sota, Shalom Nitnali, Tava Be'ed Echad. See, Rabbi Shmuel says, you cannot go ahead and generate the Sota process. You cannot start the Sota process through an Eid Echad, through one witness. In other words, that you need two witnesses to be able to see that she was alone with a particular man. And yet, again, so you require two witnesses, and yet there's a din of Gilgul Shavua. Mamon shenitan lihitava be'ed echad, eino din shemagalgalin. Then Rabbi says, certainly Mamon, when it comes to monetary matters, where the testimony of a singular witness is significant, certainly there is a din of Gilgul Shavua. Rabbi says, now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Mamon shenitan litava, lashpia be'ed echad, in ta'ano mana v'kafarlo. So Rabbi says, remember again, when it comes to monetary matters, eid echad could what? Could force you to take a shavua. Meaning of eidos of a singular witness can't go ahead and allow Beis Din to affect any type of collection, but he can absolutely allow Beis Din to administer a shavua to the litigant. So the Gemara says, so here's the Kal v'chomer. If Sota were the process, no process of Sota could be initiated by an Eid Echad, yet there's a din of Gilgul Shavua. Certainly by Mammon, where Eid Echad is impactful, there should be a din of Gilgul Shavua as well. And that's what the Gemara is suggesting over here is Sota, which has a heightened threshold to get to the Shavua process, there's a din of Gilgul. Mammon, which has a lower threshold, certainly should be subject to the Gilgul process as well. So Ashkechan Bevadai. So the Gemara says, fine. So now we've established that Gilgul Shavua applies by Iser, Gilgul Shavua applies by Mammon. So far now, I've only established the concept of Gilgul Shavua applies in Vadai cases. Now, what does it mean, Vadai cases? Look at Rashi. Ashkechan Vadai. Rashi says, Shemagalgal and Shavua, Ta'anas Bari, V'davrashen Chayavan of Shokigon Karkos. Oh, Shalahodim is supposed to listen to this. So now, what have we seen? We've seen that Lamaisa, Gilgul Shavua works where there is a definitive second claim. In other words, we'll say, where the person says that I'm bringing you to Beis Din because of Taina X, but you know, now I also want you to swear regarding Taina Y. Taina Y itself couldn't generate the Shavua. But once you're taking a Shavua for X, we're going to goggle the Shavua on Y. But the claimant is making a definitive claim for Y as well. Suffek minolon. How do I know even in a case of Suffek? Now, what's a case of Suffek? Listen to this. It's actually quite interesting. Look at Rashi. Suffek minayim. He says, Tainas Shema, Kigon Shvuas Ashutun Varis, and Shechalku, Disnan Beshvuas, Chalku Ashutun Varis, and Yochalashbio, Vikatainis Chayla Shomi Mokomacher, Megalgon Alavasakol, Almasavina Megalgon. Let's listen to this. This is really fast. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. This is actually quite fascinating. Listen to this. When you're, this is actually really fascinating. When you're in partnership with someone, say anyone who's in a business partner, listen to this very carefully. If you're in a business, if you're in a partnership with someone, one partner could force the other to take a shvua that he has not done anything dishonest in the business at any point during the partnership. It's an incredible mechanism that Chazal set up to ensure that partners remain honest with each other. I don't have to have grounds. I mean, it's probably not very good for the relationship and the partnership if one does this too often. But the idea over here is if I'm in business with someone, I could force a shavua at any moment. At any moment. I don't have grounds. I don't have suspicions. I want to make sure you're being honest with me. You're not taking any money out of the register at night. You can force a shavua. However, once the partnership dissolves, so obviously they cannot impose that shavua upon each other anymore. However, so imagine the following situation. Reuven and Shimon are business partners. When they're partners, they can force each other to take a shavua at any time. Now they dissolve the partnership. Now they have some other legal matter with each other. So Reuven brings a claim against Shimon. Shimon has to take a shavua. Now, once Shimon's taking that shavua, what could Reuven do? Oh, and I want you to also swear that during our business dealings, you never did anything wrong. Now, in this case, Reuven may ask Shimon to do that with absolutely no suspicions. I don't even have anything in mind. I can't even think of a particular circumstance, a particular instance. I don't have anything specific in mind. I just want you to take a shvua. We'll say that's a case of suffix. You see, in that case over there, the claimant is not saying, I suspect you of A, or I suspect you of B, or of C. He's saying, I suspect you have nothing. It's just, look, you know, while we're here already, while we're taking the shvua already, would you do me a favor and just swear that you were always honest during our business dealings? So now we've established that Lamaisa, Gilgul Shavua works by Isser, works by Mamon, works by Vadai, works by Safek. Tanya, Rashbi Omer, Shabbat Yochai says, Ne'emra Shavua Bachutz, Ne'emra Shavua Bifnim. It says Shavua Bachutz, so we'll say Bachutz means outside of the Beis HaMikdosh. And it says Shavua Bifnim. And it says Shavua, excuse me, I'm sorry, just the opposite. It says, right, Shavua Bachutz outside the Beis HaMikdosh, and it talks about Shavua Bifnim, which is inside the Beis HaMikdosh, which refers to what? Refers to Sota, Rashi points out, because the whole Sota process, remember, is done inside the Beis HaMikdosh. So the Gemara said, Mashua Amura Bifnim, Asaba Safek Kivadai, just like the Shavua that is done inside the Beis HaMikdosh, Sota, it makes a Safek like Vadai Barosa, because remember, again, you actually don't have to go to the partnership case to find the case of Safek. What's the case of Safek? The paradigmatic case of Safek? Sota. So here's the difference. Remember, in Sota, it's more than just the Safek. We spoke of this in the Gemara. He has Raglayim Ledover, right? There's circumstantial evidence that something happens. But remember, as we said before, he's able to Megalgo Shavua and roll the Shavua from the Nisuin onto what? Onto Erisin. Now, are we talking about a case where he has specific concerns about anything that happened during Erisin? And the answer is no. He's just saying, once you're saying about your potential marital indiscretions during Yisuin, I want you to talk about your potential marital indiscretions during Erisin as well. So that is a case of what? That's a case ultimately of Safek. Av Shavua Mura B'chutz. So too, even a Shavua administered outside of the Beis HaMikdosh, Asaba Safek Kevadai. We go ahead and retreat a Safek claim like a Vadai claim, and we allow you to be Megalgal Shavua even onto a Safek claim. So says the Gemara, Ad Heichon Gilgul Shavua. Well, see, now the Gemara asks an interesting question. So how far does this go? Look at Rashi. Ad heichon, kocha shel gilgul shvua, galgil davar she'in nishban alav. Meaning, how far can you take this? A gilgul shvua tells me that once I'm taking an oath, I could roll that oath obligation onto other matters that themselves would not normally be subject to an oath. So how far can you take this? Meaning, what can you actually make a person swear about? Some of you who Damarle, She'ein Avdi Ata. So you can even take it so far as to make a person swear that what? Swear to me that you're not my Eved. Swear to me you're not my Eved. And I will say, now we are assuming over here that Lemaisa, what we're saying is, we're saying, swear to me that you're not my Eved Kanani. As well say, now that's a pretty significant claim. In other words, swear that you're Jewish. Right? Swear that you're Jewish. Swear that you're not my Eved Kanani. So the Gemara says, one second. It's amazing. If you call someone an Eved Kenani, you get excommunicated. This Sanya we learned. Both say if someone calls their friend an Eved, so we excommunicate the person like that. Rashi says, Akroy lechaveiro Eved, Eved, this is a second wide line, Eved Kenani, Yehei Benidui, so Hayu Menadin also Shemazalzel Bi Yisrael Kalkach, Afim Yizalzel Ubo. Both say to call someone an Eved, to call someone a Gentile servant, an Eved Kenani, both say is a terrible zilzel, is a terrible degradation in their covet, and therefore again, their reaction says, both say it's an amazing thing, by the way, you see, and in an organized, based-in system, there are repercussions for being mezalzel, for taking liberty with other people's covet. I guess the truth is, I guess today they'd call it libel, right? So, you know, if you go ahead and you say something about someone that just maligns their identity, their personality, there are legal ramifications for that. So the Gemara says, what happens if you call someone a mamzer? So this is amazing. This is amazing. If you call someone a mamzer, sofik es harboim. Beis Din goes in and gives you malchus, right? Gives you malchus. So be careful what you say when you're stuck in traffic. You know, mamish, like, you know, you can mamish, you get malchus to this. But also, they have to understand, this is very important, because understand when you call someone a mamzer, you know, you call someone an Eved Kenani, oh, well, it's not okay either, but you call someone a mamzer, what you're really doing is what? You're casting aspersion, right? It's a mother joke. I'm saying, you're essentially going ahead, right? You're essentially making a derogatory statement about the person's mother. So already you go ahead and you start doing that. Malchus. Rasha. Well, listen to this. Let's say you call someone a Rasha. So what's the halacha? This is actually really fascinating. Yoreit imo l'chayev. What does that mean? Literally, you could descend into his life. What does it mean? Look at Rashi. Rashi yorei dimo l'chayev, kilomar, lezu ein bezin eskakim. So the Rebbe says, if you call someone a Rasha, bezin is not getting involved in that. Aval hu mutter lissanoso, but you are permitted to dislike. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. But you are permitted to go ahead and dislike such an individual. So says the Gemara, look at this. He says, aval hu mutter lissanoso, va'af lemait parnasoso, both say, what can you do? This is actually quite amazing. What you can do is, if somebody calls you a Russia, you're permitted to open up a competing business right next door. In other words, they both say, which, again, now obviously each of these require greater in-depth discussion, which I'm not going to get into right now, but if somebody is going to go ahead, it's also interesting because it highlights a different Judaic motif, which again, is not a topic for today. This is the one difficulty in Daf Yomi, there's so much to talk about. The yisod that Judaism has, this dialectic between restraint and response. Restraint and response. That so often what we're taught is, just because someone says something to you doesn't mean you have to respond. We teach it to our children from a young age. Zachar, are you listening? Right? Just because someone says something, you don't have to respond. Right? It's a very important yisod in life. And yet, you see over here that when a person does step over certain lines, a response is absolutely necessary. So he calls me a Rasha. Literally, Chazal, give me the license to go ahead and do certain things that would adversely affect his business. So I could open up the same store right next door, or I could, whatever it is, Yorei Dimo L'chayev. So that balance between restraint and response is quite fascinating. So Gemara goes back there. So I'll say the point over here is, so now let's get back. So we're trying to figure out how far does Gilgul Shavua go. So the Gemara wanted to say, it goes even to the point that you can make a person swear that he's not your Eved. Saying that someone's your Eved, that's a serious transgression. You get excommunicated for claiming that someone's an Eved Kenani. To which the Gemara says, no, Amarava, Hishavali Shalonim Kartali Be'Eved Ivri. No. Swear to me that you were never my Eved Ivri. No, not Chas Shalom Eved Kenani, that you were never my Eved Ivri. To which the Gemara says, 1 second, if that's the claim, Hai Tana Samal Yosehi, Mamona Islegabe. Rabosai, the truth is, that's actually not an invalid claim. Because what's like claiming that someone is your Eved Ivri is essentially like saying what? You owe me money. You owe me money. Because I pay for an Eved Ivri. I have an investment in an Eved Ivri. And the Eved Ivri owes me the purchase price. The way he pays me back is how? Through a service. So if I say, swear to me, you're not my Eved Ivri, so that's not such, it sounds like a strange claim, but that's not such a strange claim, because the mice, what I'm saying is, swear to me you don't owe me money. To which the Gemara says, Rava Latame, Nerna Barav explains, the Amarava, Eved Ivri Gufo Kanoi. Oh, we'll say the reason why Rava said this is because, remember, Rava holds that an Eved Ivri is considered to be like Karka. Rashi says, Gufo Kami, Ve'ino Tainus Metaltalin. Rabbi says, now we don't paskin like this, but Rabbi himself happens to know that an Eved Ivri, his body is acquired by the Adon. Which means, that's what Rabbi says, that essentially Eved Ivri is Karka. Therefore, because it's Karka, there's no Shvua on it. So the novelty over here is what? That if I'm taking a Shvua on Metaltalin, movable property, I could be Magalgal Shvua, I could roll the Shvua onto what? I'll roll the Shvua over and say, swear to me that what? That you are not my Eved Ivri. So says the Gemara, Ihachi, if that's the case, Hainu Karka, so why is that different than Karka? So I mean, okay, so you've already established then that if I'm swearing about Metaltalin, that I have the ability to what? That I have the ability to roll the Shvua onto Karka. So why do I need to mention the case of Eved Ivri specifically? Because Eved Ivri will just be another case of Karka, to which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Ma'udatim, what would I have thought? Because land, sometimes people sell quietly. Im isa dizabin less they call it. Once we've established this, people, some, as much as we normally think that real estate transactions have a cull, sometimes people do sell real estate quietly. We spoke about this. Why do people sell real estate quietly? Why? Because they want to avoid a certain stigma of looking like they are in financial distress. So I know that you could kind of slip in a real estate transaction underneath the radar. So you both say, so what does this mean? So let's play this out. So Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din. Reuven claims that Shimon owes him 5 cows. Fine. Shimon denies it. You can have to take a shavua. You have to take a shavua. Or he agrees, he says he owes him 2 cows. You have to take a shavua. So, oh, now this is fine. Why aren't you taking a shavua about that? I want you to swear that you don't owe me karka, for argument's sake. So I understand that kind of negotiation. Why? Because it's possible that Shimon really does owe Reuven some level of karka, and we don't know about it. Why? Because a karka transaction could happen underneath the radar. However, hi, im isa dezavin kol isle. But I would assume that what? There's no way to go ahead and sell an Eved Ivri under the radar. Meaning, again, I will say, if you become an Eved, everyone knows that you're an Eved. It's quite clear. That's where you're spending your days. That's what you're doing. So I would have thought that for Reuven to make a claim on Shimon, that swear that Shama Eved Ivri, that's ridiculous. Because if that would be true, that would have a call, we would know about it. Kamash Malon, no. Kamash Malon, according to Rava, that there's even the possibility that somehow this Abdus went underneath the radar. And therefore, again, halacha lemaisa, once Shimon is swearing about Metaltalin, Reuven could order the Gilgul Shvua to devolve ultimately upon the claim that he's not his Eved Ivri as well. Fine. So I'll say, so again, therefore we come out, we accept this concept of Gilgul Shvua, and therefore halacha lemaisa, once you are swearing regarding something ultimately, again, that is subject to the laws of Shvua, we could be Megalgo, we could roll that Shvua onto other matters that themselves would not normally generate a Shvua obligation. Says the Mishnah. Kala Naase Damin Ba'acher. So we'll say it's actually interesting. We'll translate this according to Rashi for now, and we'll translate it according to the Silum Pshat. Kala Naase Damin Ba'acher means anything that can be used as a form of payment for something else. Look at Rashi. Kala Naase Damin Ba'acher. Shedarko Lisito Bidamim Kishakonin Chayfetz Echad. So anything that is normally given as a form of payment for something else. The Havamina and the Mishnah, as we're going to see, is that we're talking even literally about money. Money, even a coin. Anything that is normally given as a form of payment for something else. So, Kevon Shezochazeh Nischayev Zeh Bechalifov. So, we'll say, listen to this case. So, let's play this out. So, I want to go ahead and I want to purchase a cow from Reuven. So what do? The cow is, let's say, worth $100. Let's keep it easy. So I take a gold coin, or $1,000. I take a gold coin that's worth $1,000. I give Reuven the coin. Once Reuven takes possession of the coin, then what? I get the cow. Now I will say, what the Gemara is describing, what the Mishnah is describing over here is what? Is chalipin. The act of chalipin is, I want to acquire something from the seller. I, the purchaser, give the seller an item. Once the seller acquires my item, I acquire his item. So I will say, what the Mishnah seems to be highlighting over here is, even though I'm giving him money, I'm not acquiring the cow b'toras kesef. Meaning the money is not being used as money. The money is being used as what? As an object of chalipin. as an object of chalipin. So ketzad. So now the Mishnah seems to say this even works with money. We'll challenge that in a little bit. So the Mishnah says ketzad. What's the example? Hichlif sharbet para. If Rabbi Yosef, let's say I have a cow and Reuven has an ox, and we want to swap. Ochamor b'shar. Or I have a donkey and Reuven has an ox, and we want to swap. So we'll say, so what happens? Once I give Reuven the cow, I acquire his donkey wherever the donkey is. This is the concept of chalipin, that again, when I give the quote-unquote seller an item, and the seller takes possession of the item, once he takes possession of my item, I take possession of his item. To which the Gemara says, chalipin mainihu matbea. Now, let's go back for just a moment, says the Gemara. When the beginning of the Mishnah, when we speak about the idea of kala na'aset damim be'acher, kevan shezacha zen eschayv ze b'chalifav, anything that could be used as a form of payment, as soon as the seller takes possession of that item, so the purchaser acquires his item. So that sounds like even with money. So we'll say, so the novelty of the Mishnah, therefore, is that what? That money, a coinage, can be used to affect chalipin. So meaning, we'll say, money could have two identities. Money could have identity as money, and money could have identity as a kli, as a utensil, or as an object. And that object can be used to affect a chalipin transfer. To which the Gemara says, Shmamina, matbea naase chalipin. Suppose I learned from here that a coin could be used as an object, or money could be used as an object to affect chalipin. Now, Suppose there's only one problem with that, which is if you take a look at Rashi. Rashi says Shema Minas, two lines up from the bottom. Rashi says Va'anan Kaimelam Aparakazav Inma Be'anase Chalipin. There's only one problem also, which is it's not true. That's not how we hold. Right? That the Gemara in Azov points out, the Mormon Rabban Sia points out, that Lamaisa, money cannot be used as an object for Chalipin. Objects can be used for Chalipin. Money cannot become an object for Chalipin. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Hachi Kama. This is what it means to say. Kol Anishum Davin Ba'acher. So we'll say what it means is the following. Kol Anishum Davin Ba'acher means any item that requires a shuma, right? Any item that requires an evaluation in order to go ahead and give it as payment for something else. I was about to say, what does that mean? So in general, let's say I want to go ahead and pay with an object. Or for example, I want to go ahead and make a swap. I want to swap my donkey for Reuven's ox. So what is that going to require? That's going to require an appraisal of the donkey ultimately before it's used as a mechanism for the swap. So that's what it means. Kol anishum damen ba'acher. Any item that requires an appraisal before it is going to be used as a mechanism for payment. Look at Rashi. Last Rashi on the page. Amar Rav Yehuda, kol anishum damen ba'acher. Kol davar shim balasito damen ba'acher. Any item that if you're going to use it to go ahead and purchase something else, sarach l'shuma b'damim, you have to evaluate, you have to appraise it first. Dainu kol metaltalin. So we'll say, so this is true for any movable object except for a coin. So any movable object except for a coin that's going to be used ultimately for what? As a form of payment. Once one party acquires that object, the other party acquires his object wherever it is. So now we understand the example of the Mishnah. So for example, let's say again, Reuven wants to give me his ox. I'm going to give him my donkey. So now, in order for me to give him my donkey for his ox, what do I have to do? What's step number one? Call my local donkey appraiser, right? And I have to go ahead and get him to come down and appraise my donkey. Let's assume for a moment the donkey gets appraised at a similar value to the ox. Then what? I give Reuven the ox. And I say, Reuven, here's the ox. As soon as Reuven acquires my donkey, what happens? I acquire the ox. But I will say, what's the novelty of chalipin? I acquire the ox how? Or when? Wherever it is. Now, that didn't make sense. But I acquire the ox wherever it is. Meaning, even though the ox might be in New York or in California or in Eretz Yisrael, I acquire that ox wherever it is. That's how chalipin works. Once one of the parties takes possession of his object, the other party acquires his object wherever it may be. Dekanami diktani. I will say, just so you understand, this is exactly what we do by Mechiras Chametz, right? You show up, you acquire the agent's pen, any object, any kli. Once you acquire the pen, the agent acquires the right over your Chametz, wherever that Chametz may be. So God, so a raya to this as well. Ketzad, we'll say, what did the Mishnah say? So we can bring a raya to this understanding from the Mishnah. What did the Mishnah say? Hich liv shor bepara, if one wanted to exchange an ox for a cow, o chamar bishar, or one wanted to exchange a donkey for an ox, shmamina. So we'll say, so again, you see from here that what's interesting to note is that the flow of the Mishnah makes sense according to this logic, because when the Mishnah said Ketzad, Ketzad means what's an example of the Mishnah's principle. And how does the Mishnah choose to illustrate its principle? With an animal swap. An animal swap. So you see that the Mishnah is talking about when you want to go ahead and use one item to essentially affect payment for another item. So ultimately, again, that's Chalipin. And Chalipin causes and once the item of Chalipin is handed over, so the other party acquires their item wherever that item may be. So the Gemara says, So here's the Shaila. So remember, the Havamina is that the Mishnah was talking about a coin, and that, again, Lamaisa, a coin could be used to affect Chalipin. A coin doesn't have to be used ultimately as kesef, but can be used as a vehicle of chalipin. So we'll say, so according to that logic, that the Havamina, that the Mishnah is talking about a coin, my ketza. So we'll say, here's the problem. The Mishnah doesn't read well. The problem is that if you look at the Mishnah, so the Mishnah says, kol ha'na'asa dam ba'acher keva shezach, zen es chayv zeva chalifa, anything that could be used as a form of payment for something else, once the intended recipient acquires the item, so the first person acquires his object. So we thought that that's talking about money, and telling us that you could even use a coin as a vehicle for chalipin. If that's the case, then when the Mishnah then says, Ketzad, what's an example of this, and why does the Mishnah illustrate the principle? With an animal swap. The Mishnah doesn't illustrate the principle ultimately with money. So how can you say the first part of the Mishnah is talking about a coin when the Mishnah chooses to illustrate the principle, doesn't illustrate it with coins, but instead illustrates it with what? Illustrates with animals. To which the Gemara says, this is what it means to say. Peros nami avdi chalipin. What it means to say is that peros, what does it mean peros? Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, peri nami, komidi de lo havi kli, peri karele. So also here's what's interesting. The Mishnah is coming to teach me that even something that's not a kli, that's not a utensil, can be used to affect chalipin. As well say, anything that's not called the kli is called pri. Now, let's take a step back. Where do we learn chalipin from? We learn chalipin from Megillas Rus, right? This is the Megillah says explicitly, talks about the mechanism of chalipin, that the flip act of acquisition. So this is where Boaz brings up to Rus, ultimately, I can't marry you or inherit your husband's property until first there's a closer relative. So the Gemara does that, the concept of chalipin. Now the Megillah does that, the concept of chalipin, talks about, again, the use of a kli, the use of a utensil to affect chalipin. So the Havamina is that chalipin could only be affected with a kli, with a utensil. The Gemara is suggesting now that the novelty of the Mishnah is teaching me that chalipin could even be affected with a pri. Now, we'll say, pri in this context just means any other object that is not what? That is not a kli. Remember, in halacha, a kli has a very specific definition, a base kibble, a receptacle. Anything that's not called a kli, by definition, is called a pri. So this is what it means. The Gemara says, So hakanami peros nami avdi chalipin. So for example, the Mishnah says keitzad hechlif baser. So what does it mean a pri? What does it mean something other than a kli could affect chalipin? So Mark goes another price. Keitzad hechlif baser shar bepara. So let's say again, I have ox meat. Reuven has a cow. I want Reuven's cow. I can give him the ox meat as payment for the cow, and as soon as he takes possession of the ox meat, I acquire the cow. Chalipin, baser chamar bishar, or I want to go ahead and pay him with donkey meat for the ox. Kevan shezacha zeh nischayev bechalipin. So we'll say once one party acquires their part, the other party acquires their object, no matter where the other object is. Hanichal Rav Sheshes damar peros avdi chalipin. So we'll say this makes sense according to Rav Sheshes, because Rav Sheshes hold that you could affect chalipin with a pri, with peros, meaning with non-kalim objects. However, El Rav Nachman damar peros la avdi chalipin ma'ikal nimar. I have Rabbi say according to Rav Nachman, who says that you cannot affect chalipin with peros, but rather only with a kli. So what is there to say? Hachi Kerman, this is what it means to say. Yesh damim shein ke chalipin. That sometimes Rabbi say there is money that is like chalipin. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Hachi karma yesh, it's almost right across. So almost right across, but not across. About, it's across in Rashi, about five lines down. So hachi karma yesh hamashin ke chalipin. Kulam as nisin chada nilsa kamar. Umakbeya askinon. Vachi karma kol nasadam ba'acher. Dahinu makbeya. Pam shedamim konim kimo chalipin. So I'll say, oh, so according to Rav Nachman, what he will say is the following. That there are times where money can act as a vehicle of chalipin. How so? Ketzad hechlif demei shor bepara, o demei chamar bishar. So we'll say, what's the case? The case is where you exchange the value of the ox for a cow. Now, what's the case where? Look at Rashi. This is actually quite interesting. So ketzad hechlif demei shor bepara, machar dar shor mara. Listen to this. So we'll say, follow this case. I sell Ruvain a shor for $100. Okay? Umashcho. So what happens? Reuven buys it on credit, which is fine. So I give him the animal, he takes it by Mashicha, he owes me now $100. So I say to Reuven, you know what, do you have any cows? Litin b'dam, do you have any cows? So I'm like, hey, shama lo b'mana, o b'pras, amr lo mocher, hashar, amr lo mocher hashar, hari amosh atachayiv li nesurun l'cha b'dameh ha'mal salal. So let's listen to this. So watch this case. I sell Reuven an ox for $100. Reuven owes me $100. Say, Reuven, you know what? I want to get a cow from you. You have a cow? He says, yes, I have a cow. Guess what? It's worth $100. Say, fine. Let the $100 that you owe me be the payment for this cow. But say, what's the novelty? As soon as Reuven acquires the $100, I acquire the cow. Now, what's the chaf over here? The chaf, when we say Reuven acquired the $100, what does that mean? Reuven has $100 in his pocket. As soon as he reacquires, so to speak, the $100 that he owes me, so I acquire the cow. So it's a little bit of a different case of chalipin. This is the case where Rav Nachman holds that money could affect chalipin. So again, essentially what we're doing is we're taking a debt that Reuven owes me. He owes me $100 for the cow that I sold him, or the ox that I sold him, and now we're transforming that debt into the vehicle of chalipin. Then now acquire that money, and by you acquiring that money, I acquire what? I acquire your cow. So the Gemara says, "My taima, so the Rabbi Yochanan." He holds like Rabbi Yochanan because Rabbi Yochanan says, "Don Rabbi Yochanan, don see the Amar Tvar Torah Maos Kons." Because Rabbi Yochanan holds that midaraisa, when you give money from a taltalin, so money acquires the object immediately. If that's the case, umatam amru mishicha kona. So we'll say, so why, we learned this already. So if that's the case, that midaraisa money acquires. So why did the rabbis require mishicha? So the Gemara says, Gezeira Shema Yomru Lo Nisrafu Chitecha Ba'aliyah. Because we'll say we're concerned, remember that in general, if we allow money to acquire, then what's going to happen? So I pay Reuven for wheat. I pay Reuven for wheat, which means I've acquired the wheat, even though what? The wheat is still in Reuven's possession. The concern is that what's going to happen? A fire is going to break out in Reuven's silo, and $100 of wheat is going to be burned. And what is Reuven going to say? Sorry, that was your wheat. That was your wheat. So which the Gemara says, and therefore, in order to avoid these type of situations, Chazal said, you only take really ownership over something after what? After Mashicha. However, the Gemara says, Milsa de Shchiach Gazu Barabanon. But the rabbis only legislated this halacha in normative cases. Milsa de lo Shchicha lo Gazu Barabanon. But I will say, in uncommon cases, now what is the uncommon cases? This is an uncommon case, where I sold Reuven an ox for $100, he owes me $100, and then I say, you know what, let the $100 you owe me be payments for the cow I'm going to purchase from you. That's an uncommon case. Because that's an uncommon case, Chazal's legislation does not apply, and therefore again, even though we normally would say that money cannot acquire an object without Mashicha, this case will be different because it's an outlier case. Because it's an outlier case, Chazal did not legislate regarding it. Because Chazal did not legislate regarding it, so this form of chalipin actually will work. And according to Reish Lakish, who says no, midaraisa you require Mashicha. So hanich, how does this case work? Hanich, yisavar l'karev sheshes. Damar peros abdi chalipin, midaraisa karev sheshes. If he holds like Rav Sheshes, then the case is fine. Why? Because he holds that even non-kalim, even peros, have the ability to affect chalipin. Eli yisavar l'karev nachmin, damar peros abdi chalipin, but if he holds like Rav Nachman, who says that you can't affect chalipin through peros, and furthermore, again, and you can't affect chalipin through money. So what is there to say? To which the Gemara says, "You're right. Al karchach Rav Sheshes svirle. He must hold like Rav Sheshes, who holds that ultimately, again, who holds that number one, you could affect chalipin through peros, and you could even affect chalipin through, actually, oh, you could affect chalipin through peros. Once you set it up like that, then lemaisa, again, the money could work in the capacity as peros as well, and therefore could affect chalipin. So we'll say, bottom line for our purposes is that haloch lemaisa, again, we paskin that money cannot affect chalipin. It's important to know. You cannot use a coin as a vehicle as chalipin. Money only works betoras money. But you can use peros, that's the way we paskin. You can use peros, and of course, again, you can use kelim as well. So in order to affect chalipin, you have to use either a kli or a pri. Easy to remember, kli or pri. But you can't ultimately use money as a vehicle for chalipin itself, says the Mishnah. Rishus hagavoa kikasef, Rishus hagavoa bikasef, or Rishus hedya bechazaka. But now the Gemara is going to draw some distinctions between how hektish acquires things and how a regular person acquires things. So ultimately, hektish acquires with kesef, we'll discuss what that means, and regular people only acquire movable property with chazaka. Furthermore, a declaration to give something to hektish is the equivalent of handing it over in a regular fashion. Now what does it mean about it? What does that mean, that hektish acquires even with money? Gizbar shenasan maos bebehema. Once the gizbar, also gizbar is the temple treasurer. Once the temple treasurer pays for something, afilu behema besofa olam kana. But say the halacha is, once the temple treasurer pays for something, that object becomes the property of the Beis HaMikdash, no matter where the behema is. On the other hand, behedyot lo kana chim shoch. But Rabbi said the halacha is, we know that by a regular person you only acquire an animal when mishicha. Now again, that's not totally true. We saw you could also acquire bechalipin, but assuming you're not doing chalipin, you acquire with mishicha. So furthermore, amiras legavok misrasa. What does this mean? That a statement by hekdish is the equivalent of giving it over in a regular case. Haomer shor ze ola bayis ze hekdish afilu b'sofa olam kana. Well, say the halacha is, if a person says, my shar is in Ola, or my home is going to be hektish, even if the shar is somewhere else, and even if my home is somewhere else, the halacha is that statement, that pledge to the Beis HaMikdash, acquires it on behalf of the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, the hedyot lalchana ad shim shok v'yachzik. On the other hand, what's the halacha? That by a hedyot, meaning again, by non-consecrated circumstances, the halach is that you do not acquire an ox, and you do not acquire a home. An ox, you need to do mashicha, and a home, you have to do chazaka. We'll stop over here. We're going to continue Rez Hashem tomorrow with the distinctions between Hekdish and Hedyot. But the daf is going to be in the afternoon tomorrow, Miratz Hashem. Ari will send out the schedule for the early Mincha as well. So that'll be our schedule. We'll see what happens over Yontif, but at least that's actually just going to be for this Shabbos. Next Shabbos is Shabbos Agodah, so the schedule is a little bit different, but at least for Shabbos, we'll do in the afternoon as well. So let me share with you a short idea.